So we decided to talk about names. And I figured it was a good time to start talking about it because actually the book of Exile and Redemption, Shmos,
it's called names.
It's called names. A crazy plot twist. How are we doing? Plot twist. So as a result, like we're talking about names, they said, what's the significance of names? And that's the wildest thing when you think about it, because while in English, the book's called Exodus. Well, that's technically Latin. Or then when it's translated, when it goes after the first name, every book of the Chumash has like three different names. There's the name which goes after the first word of it. There's also the name of the book, which is like, so like Shmos is called Shmos because the first word is Elish Shmos.
And who's Elish?
These are the names, right?
So book, why is it Exodus? Or like why is Bereishit Genesis?
That's right. So each one we have Genesis. Genesis means the beginning.
Oh.
Bereishit. So it's funny because the way it goes is like this. You have Bereishit, Shemot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim. Or in English we call them Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Genesis is the beginning. Exodus means they went out. They exited. Exodus, hence, right? Leviticus means the book of the Levites. Numbers, because there's a lot of counting. And Deuteronomy is Latin for the second law. Deu, as in two. And Ronomy, I guess, is law. So, in Hebrew, the first way we call the names of the books are based on the first words of the book. So the first, Bereishis begins with the word Bereishis, so this one is called Bereishis, in the beginning. Shmos is called Shmos because it begins with the words Shmos. Vayikra is called Vayikra because it begins with the word Vayikra. Bamidbar, and so on and so forth. And Devarim, these are the Devarim that Moshe spoke. However, the rabbis had different names for them. We called it Sefer Yetzira, the book of creation. Sefer Galus VeGeula, that's the book of Shmos. Toras Kohanim, the book of the Kohanim, the Torah of the Kohanim, that's the third one. Chumash Pekudim, the book of counting, which is close to numbers. And Mishneh Torah, the second telling of the Torah,
I thought that was a different book.
So there's also a book called Mishneh Torah by the Rambam.
Because I saw that name in a lot of the source sheets that I looked at.
Yes, they also quote the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. It's based on the same idea. The Mishneh Torah of the Rambam is a review of all the laws, the same way as the fifth book of the Torah is a book of all the laws.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, what made the Rambam his work so special is that he went and he took all of Jewish law and said, I'm going to write a book that you're not going to need any other book besides my book. And this is an entire reprisal of all of the oral law. So that's why it was called Mishneh Torah, because it's a review of all of the oral law. The only thing is that what happens, you know, he said, okay, I'm the only book you'll need, so of course what happens is
that
he wrote a book on his book. So everybody wrote a book on his book. It's one of the most popular books to write a book on, is the Mishneh Torah.
My aunt found one that was a fully illustrated, like for kids, Mishneh Torah had each thing.
Yeah, so Chabad put out this.
And I think that it changed like the way that like when I looked at the obviously I looked at the pictures first, but actually like seeing them written out what the mitzvot are, like obviously we talk 248, like
sure,
all of those types of things.
But it fleshes it out more.
But like when you're actually able to see like the list of them.
That's right.
So now that we're talking about like Pesach and like the Ten Commandments.
Right.
Like in three classes this week, last week I heard that it's all of the Ten Commandments, all the laws of the Torah,
mm-hmm.
and all the mitzvot can be found under like one of the
Ten Commandments.
And I just think that's kind of crazy that it all kind of comes back.
Right. It all sort of folds into each other. It's a very, very symmetrical system. It all folds in and folds out. So when we talk about names, we have a book that talks about names, but the book about names also talks about the book of Exile and Redemption. So why do I need a list of names of Exile and Redemption? We're going to put that on the back burner for a minute, because that's going to be like the question we're going to sort of deal with as we go through, and we'll kind of come back around. So naming stuff is actually one of the first things that we see somebody doing in the Torah.
God. Animals.
So it's a God and man. Both man and God go around calling things things. God goes around calling the light light, the dark dark, then he has man, and man goes and calls all the animals names. And names everything, and whatever man names this animal, that man names, that's what it is.
In Pagel's class. It was like the, in Judaism, you name that, like, first, before the object, or is it, what is it, like, that based off the essence or whatever it is?
After, maybe. Oh, that's why they don't give names until the baby comes out.
Right, so.
But like, I remember he said something about like those type of things that in Judaism, like the name,
yes,
is like a very special.
Exactly. So, yes. So the pasuk says, whatever man called, whatever Adam called the animal, that was its name, meaning that he, part of that naming process was really to zoom in a very, very deep way. And like understand what that essence was, right? To say, well, whatever he called the animal, that was its name. You know, this is exactly a giraffe. This is nothing else could giraffe just as well as this giraffe, as it were. So the act of name is very, very, very incredibly important. And pulled up a bunch of sources that are really just fantastic. But and also trying to figure out what in the world this has to do with Exodus, Galus and Geula. So we're going to tease apart like these three different things: names and exile and redemption. Because the book of exile and redemption, this book and everything in the book talks about redemption and what true redemption is really all about. And the Ramban has an introduction that, if you go, you look at every book of the Torah, Ramban wrote an introduction to it, and the introductions are classic. They're all very, very classic. They all explain like the entire point of each book of the Torah. So you want to know what's going on in each book of the Torah, read the Ramban's introduction. We want to go, want to know what's going on in any book, should read its introduction. Because normally what happens is that you just jump right into the book and you're just working with the author's assumption. But really, most authors write about themselves and their assumptions in the beginning of the beginning of every book. Right? Every book, they put themselves in the introduction the most. So you want to get a sense of who they are, read their introduction first. So you get a sense of what they're doing, where they're going. Even in all of your books, in any book that you're reading, you want to understand the person, like, why did I decide to write this? Well, let me explain. Even they say that a book without an introduction is like a body without a soul. Sefer b'lo hakdama, guf b'lo neshama, or b'li neshama. A book without a soul. A body without a soul. A book without an introduction is like a body without a soul. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. Why? Because the soul of the author is there. You want to hear what they're about, what their whole story is. It's one of the most unbelievable things in The Lonely Man of Faith. The only thing that Rav Soloveitchik writes is an inscription to his wife.
What? Did you ever read that book?
The Lonely Man of Faith. It says, "Titania, woman of supreme strength and great valor." It's just written.
There's no like description about like who he is or like.
What. Right, in honor of my wife.
Straight to the point.
Oh yeah, in honor of my wife.
Way too much.
Yeah, so he assumed that.
Not philosophical.
He assumed you were very, very smart when you, and this is what was bothering most people.
Yeah, it was too philosophical for me.
Yeah, there was a time where people like really liked to think a lot. Now we like short clips on a video. Exactly.
We got so lazy, intellectually lazy. Intellectual laziness.
It is true. So I found a couple of great sources. One, there's a great book that they put together from Reb Chaim Kanovietsky. You might have heard of him, the famous Reb Chaim from Borough Park, not Borough Park, B'nai Brak. Sorry. And in the internet, he has a book on names. It's called Shemos Ba'aretz. And fortunately, if you have your handy YU library credentials, you too can log into the Otzar HaChachma and pull it up. Because they have like almost every sefer under the sun in the Otzar HaChachma. The Otzar HaChachma is like, it's like as crazy as like...
We both look at each other and we're like, what is that?
It's a program it's like a database. And you go into it, and if you're looking for any book, it's like there and it's digitized online.
All
and
the Judaic books?
All the Judaic books.
Wait, like, what?
Yeah.
Did you know about that? I mean, I haven't really used the English one either yet.
Wait, in the YU library?
Yeah, well, you can do it on any computer. You go to YU library page, and you go to databases, and you go to Otsar HaChachma. Otsar HaChachma, so they have, like, so many Jewish books, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of books. Otzar HaChach, HaChachma. Otsar HaChachma.
Wait, H-A-C-H?
HaChachma. Otsar HaChachma. So you can pull it up.
Okay, I can figure it out from that.
Yeah, Otsar HaChachma. And so typed it in, and boom, I remembered seeing it at one place, and there it was. And in the introduction, they had some really awesome sources, even to start off with. So first thing is like this. He says that there are three names that a person has. The name that his parents give him, the name that people call them, and the name that they are, that history looks back to that they have. Right? That's pretty cool. Right? There's the name that you're born with, the name that how people refer to you, and then how you're regarded in history. And you see sometimes you'll see in Tanakh, you see different people who have different names. And it says sometimes it's their birth name, and what they are, what they're doing, and then who they are.
What about the name you give to yourself?
That's like the last one. That's the name that you give to yourself. Another really great one is the famous, famous tradition that you might have heard, that when your parents are going to name you, right, whether it's at for a guy at a bris or for a woman at her, when they have the aliyah, right, when the baby naming. So it's the Arizal says, it's in Sefer Gilgulim, that this is the name that the father and mother give when you're given your name. It's written above on the Kisei HaKavod. It's written on Hashem's throne. And this is how they're called above. Because there's nothing which is by chance. And Hashem then creates a situation so that the name falls into your parents' mouth. So it comes into your parents' mouth. It sparks in your parents' consciousness. And that's why they decided to call you that name. So why specifically named you for this relative versus that relative? Why did they name you because for this instead of that? Why was it? Because they had a little bit of prophecy. They even
Hashem
stored.
Gave it to them? Like Hashem gives our parents a little bit of a prophecy?
A little bit of prophecy, a little ruach hakodesh, a little spiritual sight.
So how come that doesn't make us, like, I know this might sound dumb, but how come then that doesn't make us like a Navi type of thing?
It does.
If we were born with...
So each one of us do, and we'll talk more about it. Each one of us do, and when you'll name your children, you'll have that spark also. Yeah, you have that little spark, hashgacha, to see into them a little bit, to give them that name. And even more so. So the Rashba, right? We lean in on the second syllable. The Rashba, or the Rashba, however you want to say it, he writes, you should know, calling somebody a name is telling you about what their essence is. Something that doesn't keep going has no existence, so we don't call it anything, but something that's here, so we call it the name. And therefore, if you look, whenever somebody gets named in Tanakh, the name like holds water and it means something. It descends to their shorish. It descends to the root of who they are. And it says, and they called them that. He says also, this is why that up until Shais, Adam Mechava's third son, no one else has the expression, and they called his name X or Y, because Shais was the only one who really populated the world. Shais is the third son of Adam and Chava, Adam and Eve, right? So he's the only one who had the children, who all of us are the children of Shais, Seth. Nobody calls it Seth, but Shais. Because Shais means also to spread out. So his children are the ones, the descendants who spread out over the world.
Then why are we random question.
Mm-hmm.
But why are we then referred to as like the children of like Abram and Zora.
Ah, so we're a branch off of that tree.
Shais
is the... So Adam and Eve, their son is Shais. His great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson was Noach. Right? Noah.
What about the guy that killed his brother? What about that?
Cain
and Hevel. Those two.
Wasn't that Adam and Eve's brother?
Yeah, the first two. They're the ones who... They really didn't make it that much.
Well, because, he killed his brother.
So why did they talk about them more than...
Because the Bracious is a book full of failures. Lots and lots and lots of missteps till we finally get to Avram and Sarah and Yitzchak and Rivka and Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. And even there, we have all those missteps and failures and people becoming who they're becoming. The entire plot development of each person, their entire story emerges, right, over the course of the Sefer. So, but it all starts. So, you have Shais. Shais's great great grandson is Noach. His son is Shem. His great grandson is Terach, whose son is Avram, whose son is Yitzchak, whose son is Yaakov.
How do you know all this? It's
Well, because it's our family tree. because also that's that the first two parshios are very hard, because they're like these wild and crazy stories. The stories get much more normal after Lechacha, but things are very intense in Bracious and Noah, because that's like the stories of long ago, the stories of long, long ago, the as it were prehistoric stories. So, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov has a really great quote. So he says that through depression, a person forgets their name. Right? Aide Mara Shchora Va'atzvos, Eno Yodi Mishma, a person doesn't know their name.
Oh, is that why also there's a thing with like. Pesach, we were slaves!
Mm-hmm.
We were oppressed!
That's right. That when a person is sad, a person is depressed.
Did you say oppressed or depressed?
Both. Depressed and oppressed.
Okay, because just clarifying which one I heard. Because when you said oppressed, I was like, oh.
Well, so here is depressed. Here what he says is depressed. We're going to get to oppressed shortly, but it's the same idea. Depressed and oppressed. Well, because when a person is oppressed, they can become depressed. So he said that what happens is that there are people who are dead who the Malach asks them, "What's your name?" and they don't remember it, because they're sad. So he says, therefore, a person should always try to be joyful, no matter what's going on. Even when a person feels far from Hashem, be happy because you're a Jew.
Yeah, period.
Exclamation point. Facts.
And that's God.
Now, God.
So, and with happiness, you can give a person life.
So true.
And this is why the Gemara talks about there are two people who are merrymakers. And when the rabbi said to them, these guys, they're Bnei Olam Haba. Why? Because they make people happy. This idea of being able to know your name, as it comes from joy, when you really access who you are. So I wanted to explain now a little bit more about exile. A person is in exile, right? The entire Sefer starts off when we talk about exile, gullus, right? Gullus means... Whenever we talk about exile,
getting kicked out of Israel.
More than that, though, it's gullus means that when something is out of order, things aren't in their place. So it means all of that. We're not in our land. It means that we're broken as a people. It's a departure. It's like being sick. A person's sick, right? Exile is to be sick. Gullus means like a sickness. It's that you're not the way you're supposed to be. Anytime we reflect on exile gullus means that I'm not who I am. I'm not who I should be. I don't remember my name, right? I'm not who I need to be. And it says for that reason, gullus also exists. Part of why there is exile is then to show you the contrast of what can be. That's why on Pesach, we start with gullus. We start with exile, and then we will work our way up into freedom. The law in the Seders is that we start by telling a story, we start on a low point, and we go to a high point. It's a big lesson for our lives, because that we're always, you know, we're always having a hard time until we get out of exile. So he says, Maral says, in order to understand ourselves, understand what Geula really is, we are in exile because we understand the opposite, the contrast. By seeing what we, you know, when we're out of sorts, when we see what's wrong, then we come into really recognizing who we really are. Only by sort of seeing like what we're not and what isn't. So that contrast is really what brings it all out. Wanted to share with you something which is really fantastic. I was looking for it today. Thank God I found it. The teaching from the Beis Yaakov of Ishbitz, the Ishbitz Rebbe. The Ishbitz Torahs are very psychologically deep, very, very compelling. They very much get you in the middle of who you are. It's a very, very like fantastic philosophical world. I happen to like it a lot. It affects a lot of my thinking. Humble brag or T4, whichever one we want to say. So that thank God I had the schuss to put out two books on Ishbitzer teachings in English, and it's really great. So if you want to do more reading, you can go to Amazon again, push product, and that's called look for Boshnak. It's there, and my cousin who plays the trumpet, she's there too. Sam Boshnak, but. So Beis Yaakov says, "Ki shame eno rak ma shebnei adam maskimim." Your name isn't just what people decide to call you. It's not just what the people like decide. Rak hu ma she adam davak b'shorish nafsho. It's what a person clings to the source of the soul. All of your yearnings, your thoughts, are all concealed in your name. They're all there, present in your name. And the root of each person that a person attaches to really is showing what the main part of you and the source of the person's hopes, dreams, desires that are in the depths of their heart. And a person is always, you know, just what's, where anytime we meet a person, we're only seeing what's really going on the outside. He has an expression, he calls it al halavush. That's what's going on the surface. But really it's much, much, much deeper. Right, so a person is just trying to, you know, to do everything that they've got to do, but at the end of the day, there's more than just like just us hustling just to eat. Like, you know, Maslow's triangle of needs, right? We need shelter, we need clothing, we need food, we need companionship, but also. There's a depth of who you are, which is there, and this is part of your name also.
You also have a woman.
And that's why, if you ever want to wake somebody up, what do?
Pour water on them.
Well, yes, but also call their name. You call them by their name, and that wakes them up. Because that doesn't just wake up your body, that wakes up your essence. Because you're calling on their essence. When you're saying their name, you're not just saying, you know, like, you know, but, well, exactly. It's not
the physical body; it's also the spiritual body.
Well, it's all connected. The neshama and the body are not like, you know, it's not separate pieces. There's an integration that goes.
Yes, but I mean that, like, when you call someone's name,
right. It's more. It's not just like saying like,
get up.
Person from Great Neck, like person from Canada. Yeah.
You with your toes out.
Yeah, exactly. With your toes out, Bolivia person, like whatever it is. You're talking to the essence of who they are.
Hey, my Crocs look great.
The Crocs and socks.
Wearing slippers.
Okay.
What's wrong with my
Nothing's wrong. We're all accepting of everybody's footwear over here. All of your footwear choices, we're all very.
I bet you don't have this problem on boys' campus.
No, we have all types of different problems. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about
Whoa,
it.
Whoa, I can do 25 push-ups. Can you? Not if your toes are out like that. How much do you bench?
I can do more than you. What?
I think you
should
do more than
more push-ups.
Anyone can.
So anyway, so person's woken up by calling their name. And the entire point of a person's name, a person's life, is to sort of grow into your name fully. He says that the pnimis shorash nefesh ha'adam, ikar chayav, shem ha'adam, kulu v'nikram oso b'shem, hum rochach leilech acharav. So a person's name, they have to grow into their name. They follow after their name because that's their essence.
That's why you're a nose piercing. It's worth having a nose piercing.
There you go. They're growing into their name.
Is that because of like when you're named after someone, you like, I know that like in a, you want to take on those at like those traits and everything like that. So like you want to grow into being that person.
You're trying to widen that, that we call it a tzinor in Hebrew. You're trying to widen those pathways of life into yourself. You're trying to grow into who you are in every which dimension. We exist on multiple dimensions, you know, in thought, in speech, in action, and each, like, in even levels of thought, and even levels of feeling, we develop ourselves in lots and lots of different ways, and lots of different layers. So part of, with each name, we grow into that. Rabbi Freifeld used to say, you know, he used to say, like, don't let the beard and hat and coat fool you. My name might now be Shlomo, but I was born a Seymour. I had to grow into Shlomo.
What's
Seymour? Seymour. Seymour is like an old-fashioned name, like Stanley, right? And Seymour is I was born a Seymour, but I had to grow into a Shlomo. So we grow into our names to become who we are. So long as we have the name, then it's sort of like that lifeline into us, into ourselves, to like draw down more of ourselves, to draw down more of who we can be. So, which is why, beautifully then, one of the wildest things about this sefer, about this book, is that every time, you know, in Hebrew, oftentimes, if you read a commentator, or maybe in English also, sometimes you have the words that the commentator is commenting on. So normally you say, okay, whatever, you know, sometimes you just say, okay, the words the commentator is commenting on, but it's really not so concerned that which specific words he's commenting on. He quoted this verse, and then he's just explaining a little bit about this verse, but he's really not dealing with it. Here in this book, he quoted specific words. He said, Eila Shemos B'nei Yisrael, right, what was the words? Eila Shemos B'nei Yisrael Habayim Mitzrayim. These are the names of the Jewish people, or the children of Israel, that come with them to Egypt. It's unbelievable. These are the names. Now, based on what we just learned about what a name means like that essence, that pathway that we have inside of ourselves, right? So this is the name that we have, even when we go into Mitzrayim. Like, even when we go to the deepest, darkest place, Mitzrayim literally means Metzar, right? And it's also the name that Metzar is like a narrow spot. It's a place of constriction, right? And even in the modern-day Egypt, it's very funny. I don't know how we ended up calling it Egypt in English, because they call themselves in Arabic Masr, right? They call themselves, you know, like Mitzrayim.
You call them
some
what?
Masr. Ma, right? Sadi, right? We say it's Sadi because we kind of Ashkenazi. But if you go speak to a Sephardic Jew, they'll say it like a so, like that. So there's not an S, but it's like a hard so. It's an aspirated, like an aspirated S. So, and then. And then what's it called? And then Reish. Mem Tzadi Reish is Mitzrayim in Hebrew. And in Arabic, it's the same thing, only since then the Tzadi and the Reish, there's no vowel, so it's Mesr, because it's a hard R afterwards. So, but it's the same thing as Mitzrayim. So they, for them, they call it Mitzrayim. In English, I don't know what we call it, Egypt. It's like weirdest thing. But we call it Egypt. But Mitzrayim in Hebrew means constraint. It means contraction. It means like that are being forced in, like made small. The land of Egypt, the oppression that we spoke about before, it's what was called the Beit Avadim, the place of oppression, the place of slavery, the place of contracting and trying to make you small. So these are the names of the Jewish people that are coming to Mitzrayim, they're coming to the land of smallness, of constriction, of restriction, of oppression, of depression, right? These are the names that are coming down, they're trying to make you forget who you are. I saw an ad for some show, I don't remember what it was, where someone says, man, this city will try to make you forget who you are. Don't let them, right? So and the same idea. There's a place, the world will try to make you forget who you are. When we try to focus on our names, we try to focus on our essence, we try to widen that and try to remember who we are. Who we are, what we could do. We carry like the legacies of our families with us. We carry all the spiritual energy that each one of our names has. When we know the history behind our name, what it means simply in Hebrew, what it means heritage-wise in our family, there's all the stuff that we're carrying. Yeah.
I learned that you have. I took basic Jewish concepts, and we talked about names.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a really cool course. You should take it.
Thanks.
Cool. And lower intermediate, so it's like perfect level. But in that course, we talked about how you have to give like your kid a Jewish name.
Right.
Because we're not trying to follow the ways of the goys. So like I was just wondering then now, obviously now that I've learned that, it's hard because there are names that, you know, obviously you don't want to lose it, but at the same time, if you name your kid Brecha, do you really want your kid to be Brecha for the rest of their lives? Like, at the same time, though, it's talking about the S, like, my aunt goes by Brooke if she has to do business. My dad's a Kiva, even. And, you know, he goes by Keith sometimes just to make it easier.
Sure.
Because, you know.
Right, just so that they can try to have a word to say. But, so we give our Jewish names. So sometimes you might need for official stuff to use, but you should use the Jewish name, your full Jewish name once a day. That's what I heard from my Rebbe. You should use your full Jewish name like once a day. Like just once a day, so just like call you it or whatever, because it strengthens that connection to those roots.
Who's your Rebbe?
Rav Moshe Weinberger?
I know that was just a really kind of off topic. Nah, we were talking about names and I just
it's the same idea. So he said, so what about you do? You definitely want to at least try to connect with that Jewish name once a day.
Is he the one that sits in our face and
No, I think this is Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg, but it's close.
Yeah.
But it's close. Very similar names. Very similar names. So these are the names that accompanied the Jews down to Egypt, the place that wants to make you forget who you are. But the idea of leaving Egypt is that we didn't forget who we were. The entire idea of leaving Egypt is then to grow into our name. To leaving that place of small, as he likes to say, of smallness and stupidity, to leaving the place of Egypt, and so we can grow really into ourselves, which is why. Which is why the Baal Shem Tov says, forgetting is exile, and remembering is redemption, especially forgetting your name. When you forget, that's exile. When you remember, that's redemption. There's one. There's a Rabbi Nachman story. There's one of the fast stories where he said that once there was they found out that there was grain that had some fungus on it. It was making everybody like forget who they were.
Wow.
And the minister says to the king, "Look, I have enough regular grain that we can eat it for the year, and we'll remember who we are until the new grain can grow." The king said, I can't do that. I can't desert my people. But you know what we'll do? We'll all eat the same grain, but we'll put a sign on each other's foreheads. And when we look at each other, we'll remember that we've forgotten. Right? Isn't that crazy stuff? I'll remember that I forgot. Remembering is redemption, and exile is forgetting. So Rav Kook says, there's a pasuk in Yechezkel. And the Sefer begins, he says, and I am in exile. Right? I am in exile. So he says, I am in exile. The entire idea is that the I, and this entire beautiful piece in it, beautiful, beautiful piece where he says, I, the inner I, my existential I, and I'm in exile. That's why when God asks Adam, where are you? He doesn't have the answer. What happened to you? Ayeka, where were you? He has no answer. He can't answer God's question because he's lost himself. When you lose yourself in a bad way, right? As a result, I don't know who I am. I've lost my name. Remembering my name is redemption. Forgetting my name is exile. Pesach, what we do, the entire way of us coming out of exile starts with remember the names. The story of the Jewish people emerging from exile, emerging from Mitzrayim to become who they're going to be. The story of Shemos, the book of Shemos, is all about the Jewish people, so to speak, growing up and coming out of exile. We go from being people who, at the beginning, they can't say a straight word. There are no lines for any of these actors in the script. All they do is moan and groan and groan and moan, and then finally they cry. And when they cry, Hashem saves them. But they can't even moan or groan. They can't even get the words out.
What do you mean
he saves them? He sends Moshe Rabbeinu to go save the Jewish people.
Yeah, but then he gave them an extra 4 years of exile because they were whining.
So that's another story. That's already Bamidbar. But that actually, what were they whining?
They said,
and God said, fine, you won't. He gave them exactly what they wanted.
You don't mess with the big man.
That's a different time?
That is a story for a different time.
No, that's a different time, like a different instance?
Yeah, that was 2 years later.
Okay.
So the Jews are in exile at the beginning. They can't even say it. They can't see the words. They can't find themselves. And throughout the rest of the book, they get out of Egypt, they get the Torah, and they build the Mishkan so they can dwell with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This entire thing is redemption. That's the story of redemption.
Rambans, they did a golden calf.
That was a misstep. They made a mistake.
But then it put them back down.
But the Mishkan was repair of it. If you look at some of the Midrashim, that's what it says. Or for some of it, it was part of the plan the entire time. It was part of the plan the entire time for them to grow into a people who are people who live with God. And the whole idea of the Sefer is to grow, is to watch them grow up. That's what redemption is. It's not just being oppressed and then being free, right? That's one step. But there's more to that. You know, life's not just, you know, Maslow's triangle again. It's more than just physical survival. People need, you know, law and culture and to become more than just that. And that's what the Sefer is all about. And Pesach is part of that entire story. And Pesach also reminds us who we are. That's why it's so important to have a Seder. The Seder, what's the point of the Seder? The Seder is all about telling our story. Tell you even more, Pesach's really about telling the story. That famously, the Arizal says, you know what the holiday really is, it's in its name. What's the name? We call it
Passover.
It's called Pesach, but the way that we say it is Pesach, right? We tell the story, the mouth speaks.
Oh, I thought the English version of like Passover. But,
well, it is, because that's one of the reasons Pesach.
What?
Pay his mouth and sach has to speak. The Pesach, it means lifsoach, also to jump, to leap between, to pass over. But Passover only has one of the meanings to it, where Pesach has a lot of different meanings to it when you know the word. Because English is a little bit more of a stunted language. Hebrew is much more rich. So lifsoach, you jump, but also Pesach, we tell the story. We're telling like our story of us. And that's also why all the Seder plate, the matzahs, to a certain extent, it's all there to sort of give us back our processes, to give us back ourselves. Why do you think we have wine at the Seder? We have wine at the Seder because part of it is to bring back a certain...
You're like kings.
Exactly, and a certain joie de vivre,
enjoy the wine.
joy, joy de vivre. That's sort of like simchas achaim, as we'd say in Hebrew, simchat achaim, a joy of life. It gives us back a, you know, a celebratory sense. Again, we can remember our name. And the wildest thing is that also, it's not just when we remember our name, but also, it's a funny thing in Sefer Shemot, there's a whole conversation between God and Moshe. Moshe says, God, what do I call you? And God gives him like this answer. And then Moshe's like, what? He's like, and God's like, yeah, I appeared like this, this was my name, and this, that was my name. It's also, it's a whole funny story of like, you know, what's God's name? Well, God is also called the God of Abbas. We say in Tefillah and Davening, "Beshimcha Hagadol VaGadosh Shneikra Aleinu." His great and holy name is called on us. Like that's what we call Yisrael. We're God's people. Even we wrestle with God, we are God's people. God's name is in our name. When we remember ourselves, we remember God, and vice versa.
What do you mean wrestle with God?
Because remember
Yaakov
and the Malach?
Angel though.
Right, so El can have that connotation. That's the, what's it called? It can have that connotation. Yeah.
Connotation?
Yeah, it can have that connotation. El can be a mighty power. It's like a lowercase e or an uppercase e. Lowercase Aleph and an uppercase Aleph. Just like the word Elohim.
There's uppercase Aleph and lowercase Aleph?
Air quotes. Like when we say Elohim, right? We say Elohim. Elohim is simple Hebrew, just means a judge. But big Aleph, it means God. It means Midat Hadin, God's attribute of justice.
How can you tell if it's uppercase or lowercase?
Remember in elementary school when they had context clues?
Okay.
So context clues, you read the sentence around it and you'll figure it out. That's part of it. I have to do, you have to sort of figure it out. But that's what I want to try to talk to you a little bit about today, about names. A name is a conduit for you, right? For who you can be. When we remember our names, that's what makes us free. When we forget our names, we forget who we are. And you know how it is when we forget ourselves, right? When you forget who you are, you forget yourself. What makes you special?
This just got deep all of a sudden.
Yeah. When you forget who you are, so you forget what makes you special. You forget what makes you you.
How does one do that? How does one just forget? You lose yourself.
When a person's depressed, they don't remember who they are. You ever talk to somebody who's the most talented, most attractive, most interesting person? And they're really just, not fake humble, but like really they're down on themselves. They can't see anything good about themselves. And like everybody like knows that you're awesome, but they're walking around with a horrible self-esteem. That's totally an example of them forgetting who they are. Right? For whenever we have people have depressive moments, they forget who they really are. A person with like Rabbi Nachman says, a person when they're depressed, they forget who they are. They don't know what their name is. A person's in exile, they're in exile from themselves. They forget who they are. A person remembers who they are. They live with a joy of life. Because when a person feels happiest when they're doing something that like vibes with them most. Like when a person does you do a job to pay bills sometimes. But sometimes the person does the job, it like crushes the soul out of them because you're really not feeling like you're doing your full potential. Like in Israel, when they were able to rescue like a lot of Soviet Jews from Russia, right? So they came, and until they could like get the language down, you have people who were physicists who were guard duty, or they would be like sweeping streets, but they're PhD in physics. So on one hand, so some people can say, I'm really depressed from this. Person who like learns a certain amount of resilience, they say, it's better than being in Russia, and we'll work this out, and eventually I'll learn the language, I'll be able to get a job. But you gotta start someplace. But the impression, it can like fall on you like a ton of bricks. This is like not who I am. And you like, look at me. I'm just like, you know, I spent all that time in graduate school, and I'm just sweeping a street over here. So it's like it can be a powerful thing. When you don't feel who you are, you forget who you are, you lose yourself. And when you can remember who you are, you feel most, as we'd say, self-actualized. Or as it were, that's when you vibe the strongest. That's when it really like comes out of me being who I am 100%. That's the expression, living my best life, right? So living my best life is when I'm using my name fully. I'm really in contact with who that is and who I am. That's what I wanted to explain.